Hey everybody, it's Adam, live and in person for you. Hey everybody, it's Adam, wonder who he'll interview.
Hey everyone, it's Call Me Adam, and on today's episode of Bearing It All with Call Me Adam, live from the Green Room 42, we are chatting with recording artist Marty Thomas, whose new album, Slow Dancing with a Boy, has just been released. Hi, Marty.
Hi. How are you, sweetheart?
I'm well. It's great to have you here. We are going to be talking about your new album, but before we get into your new album, I just want to do a quick little recap of where everyone might know you from, which is a lot of places. So Marty won Ed McMahon's Junior Star Search over a then-unknown Britney Spears, which is incredible. You have created a name for yourself on Broadway in Xanadu, Wicked, The Secret Garden. You were on Grace and Frankie on Netflix, and you've been a staple in the New York City nightlife for well over a decade. And I'm thrilled to finally have you here. So let's get started. It's been 5 years since we did our last interview together, which is crazy. But at that time, we were discussing the release of your album Diva, which you released with your divas, Marissa Rosen, Alexa Green, and Kelly King. So let's find out what has been the biggest change for you in these last 5 years.
I think just focus. I definitely took a slight step away from theater for a little while to record and to produce and create and arrange and try my hand at a lot of new skills. And I've loved it. I miss the theater a great deal. I've started auditioning again, and obviously I've started recording and been producing more and more and more. And I think it's just given me the freedom and the confidence to try a lot of new things. I think I'm a lot more adventurous and confident than I was 5 years ago.
That's amazing. Well, I'm thrilled that you're auditioning again, but I am so excited for this new album. It's fantastic, and I can't stop listening to it.
Thank you very much. I'm honored that anyone has heard it and is listening to it more than once. It was a very challenging project, but couldn't be more proud of it.
Well, we're going to dive into it. So your album, I'm going to edit this part out, but since this will air after the release date, I'm just going to say it's released. So your new album, Slow Dancing with the Boy, has just been released, and prior to its release, I got an advance copy, and I just can't stop listening to it. So what made now the right time to release a new solo album?
I mean, for an independent artist, is there ever really a right time to release music? The market is always so inundated and competitive, but I feel like we're in a time of do it or stop complaining. I just really was living in a place where I was thinking, if you say you're a singer, but you're not recording or singing anywhere, are you actually a singer? And, I teach musical theater classes at the New York Film Academy and around the country, and I'm always telling young dancers, like, if you say you're a dancer and you're not taking class, you might not actually be a dancer. So I tried to take my own advice. I'd had this vision of this record boiling around in my brain, and once I started to realize that it was actually a project and a conceptual idea beyond just something I was chatting about with friends, I knew I had to take the bull by the horns and make something tangible and physical out of it.
Well, you've done a great job with it, I have to say. So how long did it take you to put Slow Dancing with a Boy together?
It was a quick project, about 30 years in the making. The actual tangible product, I think, took about 3 years. Obviously, the concept behind it, which I hope we'll get to chat about, dates back to middle school. That a lot of open wounds that I really didn't know were wounds until I started exploring this project. But when I first started noticing that the concept of this album was a thing that I really needed to explore, from that moment, it took about 3 years to get the physical copy of the album out into the world, which is a very long time.
Yes. Oh my God, I was just about to say something and now I lost my train of thought. It's interesting you say that, because I just spoke with Brian Stokes Mitchell last week, and he too, his album that just came out, he said it took him 3 years as well to do it. So it's a lot of, it's nice that you put so much time and effort into it, because I think it makes it so much more special than when it's finally done.
You know, Brian is, I mean, obviously he's a legend, and our albums are on the same label. The curator of my album, really, Robbie Rozelle, who runs Broadway Records, I feel like was very hands-on with both mine and Brian's records, because both of us had an idea and a concept. Hearing about Brian's process, that he played every instrument and self-produced a lot of his own album. I love that man.
Yeah, it's incredible. It's incredible. He not only did he play all the instruments, but then he had all these other orchestras from around the country, around the world, and it was like, wow, I can't believe you went all these places and met all these people and still added all your own orchestrations and everything to it. It was,
and wrote them. Yeah.
And wrote them himself. He's a genius.
Yeah, he is. Okay, so what was the first song you knew that had to be on this album, and why was it so important for that song to be on here?
I think the first song that we settled on that had to be on this album was an arrangement that I had written of a mashup of Robin's Dancing on My Own with Celine Dion's arrangement of All by Myself, along with a snippet of On My Own from Les Miserables. It was something that I wrote quickly because the meaning behind it was so raw and fresh. But I was working on a series of mashing up musical theater tunes over pop tunes, and that's how that project began. But that song quickly got lassoed into this project because the meaning behind it was so raw and open and honest and vulnerable, which is all I wanted this record to be, that it really captured the feeling of being alone and self-doubt that I wanted to encapsulate in this idea.
Speaking of the concept of the album, can you tell us a little bit, because the press notes were, you know, it sort of takes you on this journey of this love that this boy is looking for. So can you explain sort of the process in developing the concept of the album?
Yeah, it really started when I came across a HuffPost-style article that was kind of clickbaity of Boy Goes to Prom, but it was a picture of a boy with another boy. And I opened the article, having grown up in the 90s in the Midwest, thinking, gosh, I hope they didn't rough him up too bad. I hope he's okay. Because I assume the only reason that a major press would cover a gay boy going to prom is that if somebody beat him up. And when I opened the article and saw that it was rather innocent and rather mundane, it was just a slice of life story about a dude going to prom, it didn't matter who he took, I was really embarrassed and kind of ashamed of myself that immediately my brain took me to, he got beat up. But I guess I'm of a generation just before the millennial rage of being able to be open and honest and vulnerable in public. That's where my brain took me. And I looked through the article, and it was like he was dancing with his date, and he won prom king, and his friends were like super cool with dancing next to him. Nobody felt like they needed to make a statement. And his parents were taking pictures. They were super proud of this coming of age experience. And it just stuck with me, that article. And I thought about it a lot. And every time a song would come on the radio that like took me back to my prom or middle school dances or even beyond, that article would boil in my brain a bit. And I started realizing that I was robbed of that coming of age experience. And it even hit me harder when I started to really accept that it was my fault, because I traded those experiences willingly to my church and to my family and to the belief that I wasn't valid and that I didn't deserve that kind of experience that my straight friends deserved, that they just got to have this prom and these things that they were deserving of because the church said so. So every time one of those songs would come on, it would make me mad at this song that I loved. So I made a list and started categorizing those songs and started rearranging them for some unknown project, but just really wanted to rearrange them and re-guide them and repurpose them in the light so I could see them in a positive way and kind of take them back.
That's wonderful. It's a great way to, like, reclaim what you didn't get to have.
Yeah, that was kind of what I was hoping for, was to take that moment to look across the dance floor and find somebody that I was organically attracted to and wanted to spend the evening with and have an innocent slow dance with a boy.
I love it. I love it. And you definitely achieved it on the album, so.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Before we move into a game segment, I have one more question. So which was the hardest song for you to learn and which one was the easiest?
The easiest was, I did a country two-step arrangement of Dream Lover by Mariah Carey with my two best friends, Jamie Ray, who produced the record, and Rachel Potter, Broadway star and X Factor country singer star. We used to live together for a few years when Rachel was first starting her Broadway career and Jamie had just graduated from NYU. And we spent a lot of late nights singing country music because that was our passion. And we loved turning pop tunes on their ear and giving them a country arrangement, a country feel. We called it the country band. And when I was putting this record together, I remembered this arrangement of a song that was of Dream Lover that was so popular in the 90s. And every year we would have this dance at my school called the Barn Dance at the Rock Barn, which was a barn made of rock. And I'm talking small town America. And it was always the dance that made me feel the most out of place and the most desperate to fit in. So I thought that was really significant to use such a important song of my teen years to give it that barn dance vibe. And because it was with my two best friends, it was super natural and easy and really fun to record and to arrange. The most difficult, Jamie Ray, who produced the record, he's a vocal wizard. He produces the a cappella group Voctive that's really well known on YouTube and has a great recording career and touring career. So his arrangements are epic. We decided we were going to do Somewhere from West Side Story on the album as our show tune. It was very important to the message of the album, and it was a very important song of my childhood. And the arrangement that he drew vocally was terrifying. It's very difficult song to sing, and this arrangement was really challenging. So it was definitely the one that scared me the most, but once we got it in the can, I'm so proud of it. It's so beautiful, so epic. We closed the record with it.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And I do love the country feel you did give to Dream Lover, because it is... I mean, obviously, I grew up with the song, so I know it, but it was nice to hear a fresh take on it.
Thanks, man. I love that tune.
Yeah, it's really good. Okay, so we are going to go to game time, and before we do that, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Oh, wait. You don't know? You haven't heard? You must not be subscribed to the Call Me Adam Digest. When you sign up for the Call Me Adam Digest, you are the first to know. You get a front row seat to my interviews and podcast episodes where you get to discover new things about your favorite celebrities. You get personal stories from the other side of the microphone that you wouldn't know by just reading, watching, or listening to my interviews. We get to have a weekly connection, and you can add some fun to your weekend. So come take a peek behind the curtain with the Call Me Adam Digest. Sign up today at callmeadam.com. Can't wait to see you there.
I'm just trying to reformat my interviews with, like, them so, like, a ad will go in. And... Hey, everyone. We are back on Barry and All with Call Me Adam with today's special guest, Marty Thomas, and we are recording at the Green Room 42. And now I have a new segment to my interviews, and it's game time. So, Marty, we're going to play a game called Marty Thomas Divas, based on your hit show. So in this game, I'm going to mention a diva, and you're going to tell me what song you would like to or have liked to duet with them on.
Fine.
Yes. So let's start with Madonna.
Oh, why not? I would say Sooner or Later from Dick Tracy.
I love that song. Mariah Carey.
Oh, that's a hard one, but obviously I'll Be There.
Whitney Houston.
I think it would be a medley of the Bodyguard soundtrack.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Diana Ross.
You know, unpopular opinion, but Diana Ross for me is I want muscles all over my body. That's my jam.
I love it. I love it. And that's actually a Diana Ross song I don't even know. So I'm thrilled.
Look it up.
Oh, I will. I will. Cher.
Oh, I mean, obviously, I think I should guest on the next ABBA album. But if I had to pick one Cher moment, it would be Shoop Shoop, It's in His Kiss.
Oh, my God. I love it. I love it. Celine Dion.
Now, that's a toughie. Because your brain obviously goes to the first choice of Tell Him, you know, if Barbara's busy. But I don't. If I'm picking a Celine song, it's her reggae hit. Did you even know she had a reggae?
No.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's called Treat Her Like a Lady.
Oh, I love that song.
It's from the Let's Talk About Love album where she's just like kind of passed out on black vinyl inexplicably. And she sang a reggae hit.
Yeah, she did great with that. That's one of my favorite songs on the album.
Same.
So good. Oh, my God. And lastly, Aretha Franklin.
Oh, you know, I would do Pride, Deeper Love. I think Aretha and I would take the Pride market by storm, don't you?
Yes, I do. I do. And with technology today, there has to be a way to make that happen. All right. Well, we are going back to some questions. So this batch of questions, though, is getting to know more about you through songs on the album. So first of all, you open up the album with Slow Dance. So what boy or boys would you want to slow dance with?
Like what today? Like boys I know or celebrities or?
You can take it in any direction you want.
I mean, if Jason Momoa were available for a slow dance, I wouldn't say no. But I'm very fortunate that I do have someone special in my life right now, and I slow dance with Jeffrey pretty often.
Aw, that's so nice. One mashup on the album is Save the Best for Last and Everything I Do, which you have subtitled Seventh Grade. So what was Seventh Grade Marty Thomas like as compared to today?
Seventh Grade Marty Thomas was awesome. Kidding. Seventh grade Marty was a little bit lost. I had just made my Broadway debut in New York, and as the Secret Garden closed, I moved back to my hometown, very small town in northwestern Missouri, a farm community. And he just did not know up from down, and you can take the country boy to the city. It's probably going to be hard to take him back to the country. And it was. It was a challenge. So I was lost in trying to find this open-minded new city life that I had learned and transplant it back into the Midwest that seemed so foreign. Marty today, thank the universe, is a much more confident human and a much more serene human. I just don't think I saw possibilities for myself in the seventh grade. I didn't realize I was ever going to be able to be happy.
Well, that's nice that you are. You're able to command it now.
It's a blessing. I see the youth, I see kids today who are able to just be themselves, and they see role models on TV and in the theater, and they see examples of themselves because representation matters. It matters. And I see kids who are able to just do them today, and I'm so jealous of it, but I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful that what we did in our generation and what the generation before us did that's gotten us to this place. And I hope that this generation is able to do even better so that tomorrow it's even easier.
I hope so too. And we did, it takes me back actually earlier in the interview when you said you were reading the article that inspired the album. I mean, my mind would go to that same place of, oh, did he get beat up? Did something happen? Because that's what we sort of grew up with that kind of like, that's what happened when you were out and doing things like that. You, bad things happened.
Yeah, it's almost like you hear those just insane people talking about a woman from the Me Too movement and saying, well, it's her fault. She had it coming. She was asking for it. But she didn't, though. And, you know, I feel bad that my brain went right to, I hope they didn't hurt him. And I was so thrilled that, honestly, I was also thrilled that the article wasn't like a pat on its own back. It wasn't like a look how woke we are kind of article. Yeah. It was just a slice of life. And they just happened to be interviewing a boy who went to the prom with a boy. They didn't highlight it. They didn't put it in their June Pride flag issue. They just distributed a normal article. That's where we have to get to.
Yeah, and it's good that we're getting there. Yeah. Okay, so another song on Slow Dancing with the Boy is Remember Me This Way. So how do you want to be remembered?
How do I want to be remembered? I want to be remembered as kind. I feel like I've had moments in my life where I feel like I treasure everybody around me and that I'm kind and generous. And I've had moments where I feel like I've been in a very selfish place. And those moments don't feel right and organic. They don't feel me. I hope I'm remembered as somebody who tried really hard to do the right thing.
Well, I think you will achieve that because everything I know about you has been just kind and generous. So.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
You also do a cover of one of my favorite songs, Show Me Heaven. So what does your version of heaven look like?
if I just let my brain roam and say the word heaven, I go to late 90s, New York club life, the limelight, like 98, 99, wasn't old enough to be there, but in the late 90s, that didn't matter. The limelight was in this old Catholic church that they had done nothing to renovate. It was just a Catholic church, and we would dance to Hex Hector in the main hall, and there were these two disco balls that were like angels back to back over a big circle disco ball, and it was featured in everything from Queer as Folk to Sex and the City, because it was a heyday. It was just like, everybody around me was rolling high as a kite, but I was too naive to know it. I was never into that. I didn't even drink. I couldn't afford it. So I would be Sober Sally just in the middle of the dance floor, shirt off, dancing like it was my oxygen. And at the time, it really felt like it was. There were vocal records. It was always like a Jennifer Holiday remix. And Mary Mary's Shackles was big that year. And Christine W. was it. And we had gay artists that were icons and that were just for the gay community to dance to. It was an amazing time. It was just before they started remixing Pop Divas. And I loved that. That's what I pictured. The flashing lights and all the beautiful dancing people just loving being out at 3 a.m. on a Sunday night. Yeah, that's heaven.
That's going to be an amazing time. So I always, I can't believe we're at the end already, but I always end my interviews with a play on my podcast name, Bearing It All with Call Me Adam. So if you were to bear it all and reveal something about yourself that you have not told in a previous interview, what would you share with me today?
Oh man, I think I'm a pretty honest person, but if I, oh, my boyfriend is going to kill me for this, but I'm a master hoarder. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not that guy that, like, you open the door and you might find a dead cat or something in the foyer because I didn't know it was there. You don't have to, like, shimmy past magazine piles. But if you open my closets, you would find the contents of a 3-bedroom apartment in my studio apartment. I am a master squirreler of memories and things and clothes. And, boy, I have a lot of shoes. I think that would shock a lot of people if they opened my closets.
I love it. I love it. And that is definitely something I never knew about you. So well done.
Now you know.
Yeah. That's everything. I know everybody listening, you're going to go download Marty's new album, Slow Dancing with a Boy, and he's going to be here at the Green Room 42 in January. What's the date?
January 5th. I'm throwing a prom. Hired a DJ and a prom photographer, and we're building a big prom backdrop for those second chance prom photos. So we're opening the room at 7 for photos and things. The concert's at 8. I'll do some songs from the record. And then we're going to transition into party band and dance the night away.
That's amazing. Everyone, I'll have the ticket link up on Call Me Adam. Get your tickets. And thank you so much for coming today.
Thank you so much, buddy.
He'll get the dirt and the scoop and the story, for he happens to be in the know. Just ask anybody who's Adam. Adam lives for the business of show. CallMeAdam.com.
We've known each other a long time. I appreciate you taking the time to chat about this record.
Always, always. Thank you.
Do you remember watching your favorite celebrity being interviewed, but you could tell there was more to that interview than what was being shown? My name is Adam Rothenberg, and in the past 16 years, I have interviewed over 2,200 artists and celebrities, and I am here to tell you that yes, there is definitely more to the interviews you have watched, read, or listened to. In my debut book, Behind the Curtain, The Mistakes, Lessons Learned, and Triumphs of Interviewing Celebrities, I take you behind the scenes of what really happens during an interview, sharing the joys, the pitfalls, and the OMG moments. You can get your copy on Amazon or through my entertainment platform, CallMeAdam.com. You can get your very own autographed copy.